listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. I'm so beyond thrilled to have my next guest, who goes way back into the archives of my own life, Miss Akina Adderley. How are you, Akina?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm so good. You and I go way back. We used to sing as kids together.
That's right.
In the Los Angeles Children's Chorus. I want to say we met around 89 or 90. When did you know?
I think it was 1990. It was 90.
That's right. That's right. And I remember we were little tykes. We were in the same section.
That's right. Alto one, baby.
And you always had your parts down. So I was always like, just listen to Akina. I'll get my part from Akina. All right, perfect. How are you? I'm so excited about this interview. You have no idea.
I'm good. I have to apologize in advance for being perhaps sweaty. Our air conditioner decided to die about 2 hours ago. So... And I'm in Texas, so
that ain't cool.
It's literally not cool, and I'm gonna be sweaty, and that's how we're gonna do this.
Well, I'm gonna tell you, I have a little tip with ACs that I learned because our AC went out 2 years ago, and so we had an AC guy come. This is all our listeners are gonna be bored for a little bit, but it'll be fine. No, so this AC guy came and he gave me an estimate, and the part was super expensive, and I was like, man, all right, well let me see if I can get this part wholesale because they have to list the part. So I went online and I found this wholesale AC parts place. They were charging me double for the same part. They were making $350 or $400 off the part. So I ordered it from them and then just paid them for the labor. I literally saved about $600 or $700 just from doing it that way.
Okay.
So if you have somebody come in, have them give you the part and they'll give you this bullshit about, oh, we don't get the warranty's not going to be the same. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's all the same warranty. So, yeah, I learned that.
That is a grown up money saving pro tip right there.
I'm telling you, it's legit when you don't have AC. So, what we did with that money, we went and stayed in a hotel because it was so miserable. I know it's hot. It's way hotter for you because of how hot Texas is. But I mean, our place was 88 degrees inside the house because it was during the summer.
Yep.
It was just it was unreal. It's I have so many tips, wet towels, the whole bit, because I went through it and it's the worst. It's the worst. It's the worst.
It's pretty rough. My kid has come out of her room three times since bedtime, just sweating and I can't sleep. I'm girl, I feel you. I'm sorry.
You got that 70s glow. That just girl. So Akina, let's go way back. You and I started singing 1991, 92. We sang with Luther Vandross. I think your dad hooked that up.
He did.
Tell me that backstory because I never got the backstory. You tell me how he hooked that up.
So my dad was Luther Vandross's musical director and piano player for a million years and produced some of his songs and records and wrote some of his songs. And Luther had gotten asked to do a song for the movie Hero.
I remember.
With Gina Davis and Andy Garcia and Dustin Hoffman. That's right. And so he was doing the song and he told my dad, he was like, you know what I really think would be great on this song is a children's choir. And my dad was like, oh, bet. My daughter's in the best one in LA or whatever. So that's how that got hooked up. I'm still getting those checks. Are you?
Yeah, I mean they're a lot smaller than when we were first doing it. But
oh, they are. But I deposit literally every single one. They come once or twice a year, and it's sometimes it's 85 cents. And I tell you what, I totally direct deposit.
Let me ask you because I have a funny random memory of Luther Vandross. You probably have many because I didn't know that your dad was a musical director of Luther Vandross.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So what was your memory of that session or your memory of Luther Vandross?
Well, that session, I only vaguely remember. And I remember it was us, and it wasn't the whole choir. It was like the all-stars or whatever. And then it was like a few of my friends. Yeah, that's right. And it was like a few of my friends from junior high who...
Hey, yeah, Joe Regabuto.
That's right. Michael Regabuto. That's right. That's wild that you remember that. That's right.
I remember that.
Dude from Murphy Brown. That's right. His kid. And so, yeah, I like vaguely remember that session. But my memories of Luther, like one of my favorite memories of Luther was when I was like 16 and I was wearing a white dress and they were playing, I guess, New York. I don't know, somewhere. But I was there and I was down in the pit with the band and I was just kind of sitting there in the middle of the show. And then the next song starts and Lisa Fisher, one of the background singers, comes down, who's, by the way, bad to the bone. She comes down to get me from the pit and drags me onto the stage. We're in like an arena. And this woman drags me onto the stage and I'm just like, wait, what's happening? And I'm 16 years old. And this is, you know, this is Luther. So it's like a production. So this song has like a few like cafe tables, like circular cafe tables. And she kind of plops me in one and kind of shows me the little dance that they're doing. And all I got to do is she gives me a microphone and all I got to do is sing searching, searching during the chorus. And I just had to like do it. And they just like Luther like had told her earlier that she should do this and surprise me or whatever. And I did it because like, how do you be like, no, Lisa, no, Luther, I'm sorry. I'm going to not sing right now on stage with y'all.
So my memory of Luther is not as cool as that. I remember him smelling very good. Like he smelled like cologne and he was dressed in the 90s full on Luther gear.
Yes, always.
And I just remember him also singing and tracking live and dancing. And I remember watching that. And I think you and I were sitting next to each other and you're like, check out Luther. He's dancing. And he was dancing while he was singing. I was like, whoa, you can do that? That's crazy. That's awesome. So those are the two things I remember, that he smelled great.
Yep.
And he dressed really well, but also that he was dancing while he was recording vocals. I was like, who does that? Well, of course Luther does. So,
of course he does.
Well, let's go way back before you and I met. How did you know, or what was the moment of Zen that made you want to become a singer or a musician, or both?
That's hard because honestly, like, my family's full of artists, so it never, I never had this moment where I was like, ooh, this thing that I've discovered, like, that I like or I'm good at or whatever, I could do that. I just was, everybody did it. My parents are musicians. My mom's a musical theater actress, and my dad is my dad. And his dad was a musician. His uncle was a musician. And I just sort of, it was just around. So honestly, I kind of did the opposite. I went to college and I was like, okay, well, I guess it's time for me to like stop pretending that I can go be an artist like everybody else in my family. I'm going to like go get a real job or whatever. And I couldn't figure out a real job that I wanted to do. So I, like, after college for a couple of years, I was like waiting tables and kind of dabbling in this and that. And then I was like, what am I doing? Who are we getting?
Wait, real quick though.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just point out that you didn't go to any college. You're acting like you went to just like, oh, the Joe Schmo school. Why do you tell everybody where you went to school so people know that you went to a legit school and got an education before you made this huge pivot? Go on.
Okay, I did go to Yale.
That would have been the first thing I would have said. I would have had that tattooed on my head. Like, I went to Yale.
No, I'm going to look into this Joe Schmo school because I hear they've got a good program. But yeah, I kind of was like, oh, whoops, I thought I had to get a real job and oh, I was silly. I'm a singer-songwriter. Who am I kidding? Now, mind you, I've been an educator the whole time too, so I do actually have a real job too, quote unquote. But music is also my real job. But yeah, I took a couple of years after school to realize that, oh right, everybody else in your family is allowed to do it and so are you. That's okay. That's, you know what I mean? It was very strange. I had like a very circuitous way coming back to, oh, this is just what I do. This is, you know, I don't know why I was trying to run away from it.
Family, do you think your family was like letting you find your way away from music to come back to it? Or did you just like, were you kind of revolting a little bit?
I think it was the latter. I think I was revolting, just like, you know, parents who everybody is a doctor. And then like the one kid is like, no, I'm going to be a rock star. I was like the opposite. I was like, no, I'm going to go be like, a secretary. I don't know. I was like, I don't know. What do real people do? I got to go find out. But yeah, I think I was revolting. And honestly, yeah, they were just waiting around. They were like, TikTok, like, when are you going to?
They're like, come on already.
Where's the songs? Where's the singing and the songs? I was like, okay, you're right.
So what did your dad, I think, was a keyboardist, right?
Is that That's right.
Mm-hmm. So like, did you get influenced by the writing from him? Was he must have shown you like some trade secrets or like given you some kind of knowledge on piano or just music in general?
Music in general, yes. And that was just sort of like very informal and just kind of like around, and he would play like, he loved like Philly soul, like he liked Teddy Pendergrass and like that type of scene. So we just like, he played music and would talk about it a little bit and would talk about production and stuff, but in a very sort of casual way. He did like sort of officially give me piano lessons for a time, and I have to say I did not enjoy it.
You're like, come on, Dad.
I did not prefer it. And also my mom was my musical theater teacher back in the day. And so both of those, I did not prefer either of those things. And so for that reason, my daughter, who loves musical theater and loves singing and loves music, my husband keeps being like, when are you going to give her lessons? And I'm like, me? Literally never. Like literally not a day ever.
Well, I think it's because it's like your parents are your parents.
Right.
So like, no matter what amazing information they're going to give you, you're still going to be like, whatever, Dad. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's just hard to take that from your parents.
It is.
How knowledgeable they are. So
exactly.
I respect that. That must have been hard for your dad, though, because he was playing with all these heavies and then trying to show you, hey, look at this. And you're like, I'm going to resist, Dad.
Exactly. It's like, he's like, don't you know who I am? Have you not seen my credits? I'm like, I don't care.
You're like, you're not cool, Dad.
You're not cool.
So did you take any music classes at Yale, or were you gigging at the time? Like, tell me what that experience was like.
I will tell you, I was not gigging. In college, I did take several music classes. Yale doesn't have, they don't do minors, but if they did, I had enough credits that music would have been my minor, but they just don't call it that. And what I did do, I didn't have a band or anything or gig around, but what I did do is I was in an a cappella singing group for 3 years. That was my scene. And I was the music director for 2 of those years, of course, because I'm a nerd. And
was it boys and girls?
No, just females. Just ladies. Okay. And it was awesome. I loved it. And honestly, like, that's where I really like developed my ear for harmony singing, you know? I mean, that plus the years of choir, but like that's all gone into like when I do background vocal sessions and stuff, all of that a cappella scene and the choir scene, that all goes into like my ear for harmonies. Yeah, man, I had a great time, and some of my very, very best friends to this day are from that singing group. But
the reason I asked you, this is like, we're just two kindred spirits. So I was in an all guy a cappella group at USC that was not really like, they had a mixed a cappella group, and then they had an all female group, but they didn't have like all guys. So I was like, you know, I just want to have like 4 to 6 people doing harmonies together, just a small group. Mm-hmm. So we had a group in college, and I agree, it changes. I think a lot of the reason you and I probably both wanted to do that was because we sang in a chorus and we loved singing harmonies with people. So like, singing solos was cool, but singing with other people where you're like making music together, there's something so magical about that. So it totally makes sense that you did the exact same thing. Yep. What was the name of the group? Do you remember?
The name of the group? Oh, heck yeah. It was The New Blue, because because Yale's color is blue. And so they refer to like all the old sort of stodgy dudes that were on campus for all those years as the old blue. And then in 1969, when Yale admitted women, the new blue was formed. So they called themselves The New Blue.
That's clever.
Isn't that cute? Isn't that
clever? We didn't have a clever name. We were just called All Right.
Oh my God, for real? Just All Right?
All Right. That's our name. We're All Right.
Were there any extra I's in it at least?
No. We were just All Right. That was it.
Okay. So
like,
wow.
So the great thing is that when we perform, people be like, All Right. You know, like we're cheering. And we could also like be humble. We'd be like, We're All Right. We're All Right. Like, you guys, yeah, we're All Right. You know,
that's so hilarious.
That's what started that. But So anyways, when did you start writing songs? Like, when did you get serious about getting into the music career and saying, I want to make albums, I want to be in a band, I want to write songs, this is it?
Yeah. I started dabbling and finally writing songs really right after college, when I was kind of like still sort of figuring out what I was going to do that was not music. I was like, but I'll also write songs quietly to myself. And my dad had been saying for years, you got to write songs, because I used to write poetry and I used to sing and play a bit of piano and stuff. And he's like, why don't you put that all together and write songs? Like, this is silly. You're a songwriter. You just got it in different pockets. And I was like, well, I don't know. So I've started dabbling a little bit. And then I was in New York after college, and then I moved to LA, and I met my husband, who is a percussionist, and we started kind of jamming with our buddy that we made out there, who's a guitar player, and then we just sort of started.
What year is this? How did I ever see you in LA?
I have no idea. There's like a good handful of people that I had no business not seeing, that I just didn't see for like the 2 years that I lived there, and you're one of them. Like, I know. Like, there's a good handful of people, and I'm like, I'm looking back and I'm like, why? Where? Why?
Yeah, what year was that? Yeah.
That was 2005 and 2006.
Oh, my goodness. Akina.
I know.
We should have done shows at the House of Blues together. We should have done shows at the Temple Bar together.
Oh, my God, the Temple Bar. Oh,
the Temple Bar so much. Oh. We should have played it together. What the hell?
What were we thinking?
Exactly.
Oh, fools. But anyway, we just started kind of playing, and then I just kind of started writing songs, and we started kind of putting them together kind of for real. And then we got together with the dude who introduced me and my husband. He's a mutual friend. He's a drummer, and our friend, the guitar player, and then this friend keyboard player out in LA. And who played bass? Who played bass on that session? Why can't I remember who played that? Anyway, we got together and we were like, we're gonna do demos of these three songs. And we were just like, okay, we're doing this. This is my songs that I wrote, and we're gonna do them. And it was so funny. One of the songs is called I'm Gone. It was like the sort of I like to call it my hit, even though, I mean, hit is a strong word. My debut album was like a little bitty sweet.
Oh, it's the hooky one.
But I wrote it as like this sort of like swingy blues ballad thing. And they were like, this needs to be a fast song. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like I like how it is. And it's just kind of vibey. And they're like, no, this is a funk tune and it's fast. And I like went on a break and I came back and they were playing it and it was fast. And I was like, oh, I guess you guessed it right.
Yeah.
This is fully awesome. Y'all are right. And then that was it. We like made a demo and we were like, oh, I guess we're a band now. And we kind of like messed around with names, and we came up with Akina Adderley and the Vintage Playboys. I think it was actually the drummer, Eggy,
who
came up with that. Thanks. And then we just kind of were a band, and Eggy already was in Texas. My husband and I moved to Austin. Our friend Jace, the guitar player, moved to Austin. And we kind of just put it together.
You moved to Austin because you knew it was a music city. You knew it was like a very communal kind of city. Music in the streets. Everything like tight-knit. Or did you just want to get away from L.A. because you grew up from here?
All of that. 100%, all of the above. I was sort of, we were just kind of in a rut, and we were kind of just ready to shake things up. I wasn't happy with, I was teaching at my mom's musical theater school, which was in the Pacific Palisades. It's still there. And then there's one in Santa Barbara. It's also still there. But I was living in Silver Lake.
Let's plug those schools. What are they?
Oh, the Adderley School for the Performing Arts. Yes. They're having their big 30th anniversary celebration at the Libero Theater in Santa Barbara in May, I think. Yeah, super awesome. But yeah, I was working there and I loved teaching, but I was living in Silver Lake, and I was where I was supposed to be living. I really loved living in Silver Lake. That was like my place to be living in LA. And the Palisades was like an hour away in traffic. So I was like in my car for like minimum 2 hours a day. Todd was getting kind of like annoyed with his day job. And we just kind of both were like ready to be living somewhere that was like a little easier to live in, like less traffic, less sort of like stress to live, just like a gentler, easier place. And I was looking for somewhere with a good music scene and, you know, starting to play music more. And I had only been to Austin once in 04. I went to ACL and I just kind of liked it. So I think I was like, what about Austin? And Todd was like, vet. I love Austin. He was like, he's from Dallas, and he was like, I visited Austin a ton of times. I love that place. Let's go. That place is awesome. And it was a great move. Yeah. It's such a great music community, a really supportive music community. There's like, I personally have experienced zero like drama or like competition or any of that stuff. It's been very supportive. Like, a lot of my dear friends in town are singers, and we like go to each other's shows and hype each other's shows and stuff. It's very, it's unlike a lot of music places. It's great. It's great.
LA, I wish was a little bit more like that. It can be a little bit cutthroat, but you know, you have to carve that. But what I love about Austin is it's, you don't have to carve it. It's just there as a vibe and a city, and it's very pro artist. It's very artist friendly. And what I love about Austin is it's, you can't turn any corner without seeing art on the walls, music in the streets, art in the food, art in the people, and it's just like very eclectic. It's like, wow, I never thought there was a city in Texas like that. And you know, Austin's like, they always say it's the blue star in Texas, but it really is like this eclectic, vibrant city full of music and art. Now, you guys started dominating Austin scene. I remember because I had friends in Austin that were sending me texts. Have you seen or heard of Akina Adderley and the Big Display Boys? I'm like, have I seen and heard her? I'm like, I'm but I grew up with her and I sang with her as a kid. So everybody was like telling me about your shows. I was seeing you guys always playing South by Southwest. Tell me how you carved your own kind of creative space and made your kind of a market and niche in Austin.
I don't even know the answer to that question because it kind of just happened. I don't even know. I just kind of started to get going. I booked some shows. I like put together some material to like market my stuff and booked some shows. And then we just kind of got some momentum and it just kind of happened. And then I just got band members. We didn't have a horn section initially and we were like, we need a horn section. So I just like saw a horn section at a gig and was like, y'all are dope, like, come play with us. And that was it. It was just kind of like, it all just was pretty organic.
Well, let's start playing something. What do you want to play us first?
Let's do Broke. I released that in October of 2020.
All right, here's Broke by Akina Adderley and the Vintage Playboys.
Thank you.
so beautiful, so poignant, so funky. Let's just break this song down. It's got this Memphis soul thing that I love. Got a great groove. Guitar playing's amazing. The hook's amazing. Your vocals sound amazing. The harmonies sound amazing. Give me the inspiration behind this, and we'll let's just build this into this next few questions.
Well, first of all, thank you very much. Let's see. What would the inspiration? Well, the inspiration was basically the election of 2016 and how there were all kind of people who either just didn't vote, they just didn't feel like it, or they voted for Trump because they just felt like, you know, there were plenty of people that are good people that voted for Trump because I always vote for Republicans, or I just think his fiscal policies are going to be more in line with what I'm about, and, you know, maybe didn't see the repercussions. And it wasn't even just specifically the election, but just people sort of either making active choices that harm various communities in America, or just making passive choices that, you know, cumulatively end up with the harm of marginalized people. And I just got real pissed off and I wrote.
Right. Well, the thing is too, it's like, what I love is like you create a change from something that we all face. I mean, I know that feeling when Trump was elected, just like staring at the TV, like, oh my God, this was so terrible. And to see you make something so beautiful, it's like, sometimes that is what leads to that. So I love that you took that energy and you took that whole moment and you were like, fuck everybody, I'm going to have something dope. And that's what it takes. I mean, it's like the one thing that I find is when artists do that, I'm the most inspired by artists when they do that. So you used a really strong message and images. Tell me how you chose to kind of like, you know, find the right visuals for the vocals.
Well, it started with finding the right videographer, film dude, and I wanted it to be a person of color, and I wanted it to be somebody who had done some stuff that had a gritty attitude to it, something that was not polished. Something I was looking for, somebody who had some kind of electricity. And several people recommended this dude, Jonathan K. Horstman, who is a videographer and a musician. His band Urban Heat is like taking over right now. He's awesome. And he's this like very tall, handsome man. Like meeting him, I was like, damn, sir. That's a little much. You don't need to be that attractive. Thank you, sir. But anyway, basically talking to my husband, who is also, he's a visual artist, a painter and a landscape architect and stuff. And so I talked with him about kind of the image of kind of what thought we would want for the video, and we agreed, my husband Todd and I agreed, that we didn't think it needed to be like me sort of like in like a music video like act singing or whatever. We thought it would be I don't know, poignant. I like the word you use, poignant, but we thought it would be like it kind of in your face to juxtapose images of like comfortable middle class white America like going about their daily lives with images of like brutality and like struggle and fights for justice and things like that. And then we were talking to Jonathan, and he basically had the same idea hearing the song, and so I kind of had, I think if memory serves, I had mostly Todd and Jonathan talk, because I just like was really liking Todd's confidence about the sort of direction. But we kind of just got on a vibe about the type of stuff we were looking for. And then Jonathan had the idea of looking for stuff for the end from like current marches. And he was like, well, and I got to be careful because, you know, obviously like certain, you have to have permission to use stuff, yada, yada. So he had to be quite clever and resourceful in terms of getting his clips that he used. But yeah, it was, deliberately to like juxtapose our comfortable society and our like, you know, mundane, our commercials and our cars and our things with the like people sticking dogs on people and, you know, and that's in the 60s, but currently, like, people, for example, permanently maiming people in Austin in during you know, marches and protests, cops like sending in, you know, rubber bullets that are supposed to be like, what do they call them, like less lethal rounds or whatever that is, and then like permanently maiming people. Yeah, we wanted to be kind of in your face. And it's so funny because I've gotten more comfortable talking about it in interviews now, but initially I was so not reticent, but just sort of like, people are like, what's the song about? And like, what's this video about? And I'm like, well, yeah. It's about some heavy stuff.
Like, it's raw. That's what, yeah. I love about it. It's like, let me show you the wound, mm-hmm. and let me show you what's going on while you're not looking at the wound that is needing to heal. And I know you feel this way because I feel this way, and I'm just shocked that we're still dealing with this issue. I'm in utter disbelief that it's mm-hmm. still happening the way it is. And it's you know, it's one of the reasons I started a blues trio, and I have, you know, I've got a Brazilian guy, an African American guy, and an Indian guy mm-hmm. as a message, just by how we look, mm-hmm. because of all those same feelings that you have making this video. And mm-hmm. that's why we're so connected, Akina. I love you. No, but I mean, you know what? And I hope you continue to write songs like this, make videos like this. It should always be a part of what you do, because we need more of that. I mean, it's like, it needs, I think the biggest thing the artists can do is show the next generation and children these images, this art that is inclusive and also makes you ask questions and makes you see another side of life that we're trying to turn a blind eye to. So mm-hmm. I applaud you, first of all, for writing about something that's so delicate, so touchy, so poignant, and something that resonates without making it preachy and making right. it beautiful. You made it beautiful. So
thank you.
I mean, there's nothing better than it sounding sweet to make the medicine go down. You know? So thank you for doing that. I hope you always do that. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Have you played this song live? Like,
oh, yeah.
How do you feel it resonates, or how do you feel as the performer, as the messenger, when you're performing it? Because it's easy to make a video when right. you're behind the scenes, right. but when you're facing that energy, do you feel something in the air when you're performing it? Do you kind of like, are you afraid sometimes just because of what the message is, or do you feel empowered by it? Do you feel invigorated? Do you feel like there's nothing more powerful than having a band? Because let's be honest, there's nothing more powerful than having a band behind you
yes.
singing a song like that, right?
Yeah, and honestly, I've performed it tons of times, and we usually open with it. And so the whole set opens first with the drum beat, and so it's like a crash and that snare at the yeah. same time, and that's just how you kind of come out, balls to the wall, and like just starting with it. I don't know. First of all, having the energy and the support of the band around you, but also just like, there's no tiptoeing in when you just throw it out as the first song and kind of punch them in the face
yeah.
with this first song. It's kind of just like, that's the way to go. And the response has always been super, super great.
By the way, who's playing guitar? It sounded like Derek Trucks. Like
didn't it? On the record, it is a dude called Carter Arrington. He was always my favorite guitar player in Austin. Like, since I moved here and first heard him, I was like, that's the dude. And yeah. And so I just started so Vintage Playboys, we play once in a while. We haven't played since COVID, but we in the last, you know, handful of years before COVID, we played mostly like occasionally like a festival, but mostly like weddings and corporate things and big things, because it was like nine of us. So it's like, you need to give me them, you need to give them dollars if I'm going to, you know, feed nine people. But so I was kind of just experimenting with some other lineups and other music and, you know what I mean? And just writing for a different sort of sound than the Vintage Playboys was. And so I started having Carter come play with me, and I just was like, yes, this dude was like really getting my where I'm coming from. And he moved to the UK with his family a year or so before COVID came to town. And when I wrote the song, Well, I wrote this song just before COVID town, but when we went to record it, me and my frequent collaborator and buddy, Eric Telford, we went to record it and co-produce it. We were like, well, we got to do stuff remotely anyway, because we were working on it like in 2020. So we were like, we got to do it remotely anyway. We can have whoever we want. And I was like, I want Carter. So we called him up in the UK and he was like, bet, I'm happy to do it. So he did it. The bass player, I also was also my very favorite bass player in Austin. And he moved to LA. His name's Nick Clark and he's dope. If you haven't like heard him or played with him, you need to find Nick Clark.
Yes.
You need to find Nick Clark. He's bad. And so I was like, well, we're going to have Nick Clark play bass. And Steve Bidwell played drums. I think he was in Austin at the time, but he's in the Black Pumas now. So like, I don't remember if he was at home or where he was. And who else? Was there anybody else? Oh, Stefano and Talisano. He was in Italy, I think.
You better be a name like that.
Exactly. So we just had, and it was like, and you can't really build every track like that, but we were able to build this track like that. And it was really, it was like the song for the moment.
Well, also, you can tell that everybody was fueled by it, too, mm-hmm. because it led to the playing, it led to the fire in the track, you know, mm-hmm. because of what you're singing about. So kudos to all the players, to you. What a beautiful song. What a beautiful message.
Thanks.
I love that you opened for that. And you know what? If any festivals are listening, book this girl and her band, please, because give her the dollars, because the band is awesome. I saw you guys play the Viper Room. I remember just being like, of course, Akina is in a band just like me. This is going to be awesome. You know, like, that's what it is. And I love that. I love that. Yeah. We need to play a show in L.A.
Next time
we're in L.A. Or we need to come to Austin and play together. We're going to make – we should do a little gig swap. We can do all the above. Exactly. All right, let's play something else. What do you want to play us next?
Let's do the one I released last year. It's called Home Before Dark. This one well, I guess I'll let you play it first and then we can talk about it. But these days, since I'm like teaching and also being a mom, like I'm releasing like one single a year. It's hilarious. It's very slow going, but
I'm surprised you even do that with a kid alone.
Yeah.
With a kid alone, I'm surprised you're releasing any music. With a kid and a job, I don't know how you're doing it, and I feel super lazy. So, like, thanks for just a good kick in the butt right there. So, you know, there's that. All right, what's the name of the song?
This is called Home Before Dark.
Here's Akina Adderley, Home Before Dark.
You go wandering, and every step was somebody new to be. All this time you've been pondering, is this what it means to be free? You lent a hand to a stranger. Was high, then some imagined danger made you pull back, kick sand in his eyes. Direction, time.
So good. Oh my God. You had me swaying. I was like, swaying in my seat, just like, man, you know what? I don't know if you feel like this, but I always feel like this. Whenever there's a slow blues in six, I can just go on for hours and I'd be so content because it feels good. It always feels good. It makes me reflect. It always makes me look inward. You know, that's not what the song's about, but it just feels good. That was such a great song.
Thank you.
Beautiful lyrics, beautiful melody, beautiful arrangement. Tell me the inspiration behind this.
Sort of similar. It's like almost like an epilogue to Broke. It's like, I kind of was thinking about America as like a young country, comparatively speaking. And we've tried all kinds of things. We've tried different ways to be. We've tried different types of laws and rules and you know, we've been more conservative at certain chunks of time and more sort of progressive at certain chunks of time, but we've like continued to, you know, not really, kind of not really live our stated core values and ideals. So, like home is sort of the metaphor of home is sort of like meaning getting to like goodness and kindness and, you know, generosity and like, you know, for example, wanting to live in a country where we decide that we're not going to tolerate poverty and that we're going to like use all this crazy money and resources that we have in this country to like make it so that everybody is okay. Just like as a baseline.
How about even something more basic? Like everybody gets clean water.
How about that?
And then right to education and food. How about that? I'd be okay with just that. It's like,
the minimum.
You know, it's so weird. It's like, there's so much corporate greed, there's all this stuff that goes around it, and it takes artists to write about it because we see it and we write about it because it's a reflection. It's like, look at this, and you're doing that, and you do that even with this song. It's like, I love it. It just forces you to feel, and you do it. Like, what's cool is like the first song you made us move, the second song you made us feel, and it's like, that is, I think, the yin and yang of music for me. It's like, I want music to be a celebration, I want it to be a party. I want it to make me move. I want it to have a message. And then the other time, I just want it to make me open every wound inside myself so that I become better by the end of the song. You know?
Right.
I'm going to be better, I promise. But I mean, that's what your music does. It evokes emotion. It makes you think. I mean, I find myself creating a movie in my mind listening to the song, and I love the cover, by the way. That is I wanted to ask you two questions. One, the picture is a movie it's just got a story in it. So tell me the story that is the picture, because it is striking, first of all. Thank you.
Well, the story is that I have been like crazy blessed in my life in Austin to meet and work with and collaborate with like incredible artists of different types and disciplines. So I used to teach with this incredible woman. She ended up teaching my daughter pre-K, and she also just happens to be like a badass photographer, just a really lovely photographer with a beautiful eye. And I hadn't had her do my pictures in a long time. And I was like, oh, you know, I would love to do a photo shoot with you sometime soon. Is that cool? And she was like, yep. And she like thought about it and listened to the song. And like, we like sort of talked about some ideas, and she was like, cool, meet me out in this area of, were we in Kyle or Buda, somewhere that's like out of Austin. And it was like rural. And she was like, come meet me at the corner of blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. I was like, what? And it was super rural. And she was like, bring a suitcase. She was like, do you have a vintage suitcase? I was like, I absolutely do. It used to be my husband's grandpa's. She was like, bring that. And so I brought some stuff and whatever. And then she kind of just put me on this road. And it just kind of was like her image of the song of going home, you know, before dark. And it was like, you know, right after dawn, which looks right before dark. So that was the picture. And then my buddy Mike Harnish, who used to live here, now lives in Seattle. He did the cover of Say Yes, which was the second Akina Adderley and the Vintage Playboys record. And I just love his work. I love his, you know, graphic design work and whatever. And so he did this one, and we were looking for something like very simple that just really let this picture speak, because the picture we just felt was really kind of cool and special. And we were just like, we want something just a little wash and something just that really lets the picture speak. And he delivered.
Well, it's so cool. It's like this is the first thought I had when I saw it. I was like, that looks like an Aretha cover. Oh, wow. From my favorite era, which is really late 60s, early 70s.
Yep.
So as soon as I saw that, I was like, man, that looks like a dope Aretha album cover. It's got that vibe. But the cool thing is it's like old and new at the same time. You know what I mean?
So I love that. Thank you.
New part is, and the reason I bring that up is like, I feel like songs, music, art should always be that combination of old and new. So what's cool about the newness of it, it's like you have this open road. Oh, I'm getting chills talking about it. You have this open road that like you're giving us a direction to kind of look and seek. And also there's a part of you that's like, yo, I've got these puppy dog eyes. Don't you think you should come pick me up and take me on the road to salvation? You know, and it's like, of course. Yeah, of course. You know, so it's an awesome picture, awesome song. Tell me about like, and this is, I always think about this with slow blues. Mm-hmm. Tell me about how you settle on the tempo, because it can go slower and it can go faster.
Yeah.
But there's a right tempo where it's like, ah, it doesn't feel good. One click faster
or
one click slower.
That is a great question. And that is an excellent question. I kind of just feel it. And it really has to do with like a lot of what determines it is like the space between the chords in the verse where there's those pauses. It's like bang. And it's like that really dictates, because you can feel when that pause is either too fast and it doesn't let us kind of settle, or when it's too slow and it's like, okay, we gotta, there's too much, you know what I mean? So that really helps like set the parameters of what that perfect tempo is.
I like it. Well, let's play something else. What are we gonna play next?
Well, I figured for the last one, we'd play a song from the other group I'm in. It's called Nori. I am the co-writer and the lead singer of that band. So it's like a separate thing from Akina Adderley, but it's my other big thing that I do. And we've released a few records. Let's see. Of the two, you know what I'm going to do? Of the two that I was thinking about, I'm going to have you play I See You, because it's a video so that the people who are looking at this can see something. And we went and re-recorded it right before COVID, like literally late February 2020. And it was all of us in a studio. It was the five of us in Nori, plus our string trio that we frequently play with and have come record for us. And we were just in a studio all together at once, recording live and having video shot. And I want to have you play that one because I wrote the lyrics about a dear friend of mine who passed away, and her birthday was just a couple days ago. Aww. So for her, we're going to play I See You.
I got chills already. Here's I See You by Nori.
Spirit flies.
That was so dope. Wow. Thanks. What a band, what a group. Tell me, I have one funny question for you. How did you hear yourself singing in that huge group? Because there was a lot going on. I was like, I know she's struggling to hear herself. Just because there's no monitor. There had to be.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't know. I don't know. That's a great question. How did they make it so I could hear myself? Because I did not have a monitor.
Because you had upright bass, you had strings, you had a trumpet blaring right next to you.
Right next to me. Oh, Eric, shut up with your trumpet right next to me all the time. Every time at a gig, they're like, do you want any trumpet in your monitor? I'm like, heavens no. Please, can you minus trumpet? I'm just kidding, Eric. I love you.
It was beautiful. And you had like the United Nations as your band. It was like all the colors of the rainbow in one video. It was beautiful, beautiful. Love the song, love the vibe, love the kind of like just organic wholesomeness of, you know, the video and the, you know, just all of it. So tell me how it all came about and what made it come together in the way that it did.
Well, let's see. So Andy Bodwin is the drummer and the band leader and my co-writer. He writes the music and I write the lyrics. And he will get inspired or just want to write new material, and he'll write music and send me a chart and say, okay, this is a new song. Tell me what you're feeling. Throw some lyrics on there. And occasionally I'll like change the melody a little bit to like make it sing better or whatever, or you know, feel more organic or authentic to me in terms of vocals. And he just happened to send this song like I don't know, right around the time that my friend passed away, and that's just what was on my mind and on my heart for that whole chunk of time. And so that's what I wrote, and it was the exact right music for what I wanted to say about my friend or whatever. Cause you know, he could have written something else that wouldn't have fit what I was feeling, but it was just kind of the right song for me to say what I wanted to say about my friend. And then he was like, I really want to get in the studio. Say what?
It was beautiful. Just a beautiful tribute to your friend. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. And then he was like, you know, in late 2019, he was like, I think we should record this. I think I want to record it live. And I really like how this song came together. And I want to record it live, all of us in the studio. What do you think? And I was like, yeah, let's do that. And let me see if I can get through singing it without crying first. And then I had to practice because I don't do it live without crying a little bit. Sometimes, usually just a teeny bit. But one time her mom was there and it was like,
oh man.
Jesus, waterworks.
There's a song on my last record for a band. I lost two band members and a cousin all like within three.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
I can only do one take of the song. Yep. Like, there's no way I can do this. I can't do this more than once, so this has got to be it.
And this has got to be it. This is what you get.
I'm surprised that you perform it live because there's no way. There's just no way when the emotions are flowing.
Yeah.
That's just, it's impossible to get through, but it's a testament to you, Akina, because you're the bomb.com. That's why. First of all, I'm putting this on record that we're going to collaborate on a song together.
Yes, please.
Secondly, we're going to do some shows together. Where can people find your music and find you online if they want to follow you and listen to your music?
Word. Well, so I am at akinaadderley.com, akinaadderley.com. I'm on the Spotify's, the Apple Music's, all the places, the Amazon's, all the places. And there's only really one Akina out there, honestly. Like, if you Google
there's only
Akina,
one
like,
in my life forever, just so you know.
It is. It's like huge. There's not a whole lot of Nikhils, like, in LA. So if you're like, Nikhil LA, like, it's you, Nikhil Karul, there he is.
Well, isn't it like so apropos that you're Akina and I'm Nikhil, and it just works. We're right next to each other at LACC, and here we are right next to each other again. We just had Victor Wooten on the show. We just had Jeff Coffin from Dave Matthews Band on the show.
What?
I'm going to tell you the same thing that I told them.
Okay.
You have an open window to be on this show whenever you want to feature a new record, a new song, a new anything. I love you with all my heart. Mm. I just adore everything you're doing musically. I adore every part of your spirit. I just think the world of you. So please, first of all, thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood.
Thank you so much for having me. I was so happy to do it.
Tell your parents that I send my love and big hugs. Tell your sister I send big hugs.
I will.
She used to come to LACC where I was. I remember.
That's right.
tell your parents I'd love to have them on the show, because let's talk about their careers, because I think it's going to be awesome. Just to, I didn't even know half the things you told me, and I'm like, how am I only finding out this now? So that's homework for your parents. But for now, thanks, Akina, for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. We hope you come back and see us. We'll bring you on about 9 or 10 months and just keep on showcasing everything that you're doing, because we love you. That's how it works, okay?
Awesome. Maybe I'll have a new song by then.
See, inspiration. Inspiration. We can feature, if we got, you got tons of records. We can feature old records. Don't worry. I just want people knowing about what you're doing, because you are one of those rare gems in the world, and people should know about your music. So
thank you, Nikki.
Check out AkinaAdderley.com. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Akina, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in. Lots of love, peace, and love. Take care of yourselves. Big love to you.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Korula and Eddie Pence. Right here on LA Talk Radio.